So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. On Thursday, Governor Tony Evers will recommend spending a record $8 billion on K-12 public schools when he gives when he gives lawmakers his proposed 2019-2021 budget. A new report, Roadmap to Student Achievement, by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, suggests maybe that's not the best investment and there should be alternatives. Reforms is the term used in the report. With me are two executives of WIL, Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. C.J. Safer is Executive Vice President of WIL, and Libby Sobick is Director and Legal Counsel of Education Policy for WIL. Thanks.
Good to be here.
I appreciate you coming in. So we're going to have a budget debate that formally begins. You guys are saying, let's talk about the proposed $8.06 billion that the governor wants to spend on K-12 in the last year of his budget. But first of all, give us an overview of WIL, because this is the first time we've had you on a Newsmakers.
Yeah, thank you very much for having us. We work at the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. We're a nonprofit litigation and policy center. We were founded in 2011 by President and General Counsel Rick Essenberg.
Who I've interviewed.
Who is a frequent litigator in the state Supreme Court. We've been in front of the state Supreme Court a number of times litigating conservative and libertarian causes for limited government, economic liberty, free speech. We've most famously had our victory last summer in the McAdams versus Marquette case. Since WIL's grown, we've actually kind of branched off and done public policy analysis, both in economic freedom, looking at laws like the minimum markup law.
Wedding barns. That's another newsmaker.
That's another newsmaker. We stand with Wisconsin's wedding barns. And of course, I think something that we're very proud of is our very robust K-12 education reform shop that Libby heads up.
Oh, I appreciate that. That's why we're here. In your report, okay, let's go back. The governor's going to recommend spending $8 billion in state aid to K-12 in fiscal year 2021, second year of his biennial budget. We're only going to collect about $17 billion in taxes. So he's recommending that about 45% of all general fund taxes go for K-12 in that fiscal year. Bad investment, or does that overstate it, CJ?
Well, I think the answer, and I hate to give you a lawyer answer, is, well, it depends. I mean, it depends on what is the goal. I mean, I think at the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, we are solely focused when it comes to education on, does this policy improve student outcomes? Does it help students in Wisconsin schools that are struggling? The report that you referenced, really the impetus for it is we looked at urban schools and rural schools, and we found out that our schools are substandard. They're giving low-income children, minority children, a very bad education.
Well, I want to read. Now let's go to the graphic that summarizes what you say on the conclusion, page 29 of your report. Wisconsin is no longer a leader in education reform, and we cannot accept the status quo any longer. Despite per-pupil spending that is more than half of our state peers, Wisconsin students are not meeting achievement levels, especially in the urban areas. Education reform efforts are making a difference for students, and the state should help high-performing schools expand so more students can access better schools. Boil that down for me, Libby.
We really believe that our Wisconsin K-12 education system should be helping every child access a high-quality education. As CJ said, that's just not the case. And so we really looked at what other states are doing well, talked to school leaders around the state of Wisconsin, and said, what are the barriers for your success, and how can we help you expand your seats so more students can access a great education?
Any PS on that?
Sure. I mean, you look at, you know, Wisconsin used to be a leader in education reform on cutting-edge policies. We're the home of the voucher program. I mean, it started here, and it started with Democrat support with Howard Fuller and
former State Rep Polly Williams. Right, and Tommy cut
and,
that
and,
deal.
And Tommy was very bipartisan. We can talk about that later, but that's no longer the case.
Right. Now, Libby, can you walk us through? I'm very intrigued. First of all, this is a worthwhile report, 29 pages. As we approach the dialogue over how much we should spend on K-12 schools. I recommend this report. Libby, walk us through some of the specific examples that are cited in the report. Milwaukee, Green Bay, and Madison. Problems.
So I think it's not an undertold story that Milwaukee is really struggling to educate their students. Milwaukee Public Schools is failing to graduate. Only around 60% of students
over 4 years. That's the four-year graduation rate. Yes.
Exactly.
And that hasn't changed over decades because it's a number I've been watching. Excuse me.
No, you're completely right. And we're really seeing that Milwaukee Public Schools is struggling to educate their kids in student proficiency as well. Only about around 84% of students are not proficient in math, which means they are not passing our state exam. But when you look at other urban areas around the state, we are unfortunately seeing similar numbers. Mm-hmm. So in Green Bay, for example, only under 20% of low-income students are proficient in English on our state exam. And Madison is just as horrible, actually. Around 14% of low-income students are proficient in English. And I just think that people don't really understand that our other urban areas around the state are truly struggling to educate our students.
CJ, your report calls MPS, and I want to use the right term, a black hole for reform. Yet choice started there in the Tommy Polly Williams Howard Fuller era. Still a black hole. Why?
Well, it gets into politics, sadly. You look at, there are a number of very high-performing private schools in the voucher program. And in the voucher program in Milwaukee, about 28,000 students are on a voucher. They're low income, predominantly minority, mm-hmm. And they can basically use a taxpayer-funded voucher to attend a private school of their choosing. Yeah, a number of these schools are high-performing, and yet Milwaukee Public Schools doesn't learn from them. They don't innovate. They still treat these schools like they're the opposition. And, you know, there's a, you know, one of the biggest issues that I think really crystallizes this whole debate was the vacant schools fiasco, which again is one of the reasons why we did this report.
Right. You say the surplus, what's the formal name of the act? Surplus Property Act has not worked and needs to be enforced.
Right.
You say there's 1 million square feet of unoccupied potential classroom space, or classroom space owned by MPS that they are not giving up to some charter choice schools?
Well, to your viewers, it'll be common sense, right? You think about Milwaukee Public Schools, you think about the population decline in Milwaukee, coupled with the growth of school choice of charters and voucher schools. MPS went from 100,000 students to about 70,000. So when those 30,000 students left, they created empty space. They created empty classrooms. They created buildings that just sit empty. And we've analyzed this about every year for the last 5 years. Most recently, we looked at it, and MPS has about 45 buildings that sit vacant or underutilized. And under the surplus property law that you referenced, Choice and Charter have the opportunity to buy those buildings because they want to expand and educate more students.
Have none of them been bought?
None of them
zero,
have been
score
bought.
Zero.
And we're not saying giving the buildings away. We're saying buying them with money that would have to, by law, be reinvested into Milwaukee Public Schools. So it's one of those things that's a win-win-win-win for everybody, because right now taxpayers are on the hook, and we've calculated $10 million taxpayers have spent to maintain, to keep lights on these empty buildings. It's completely nonsensical, especially when you look at schools like St. Marcus Lutheran Schools, which is a private voucher school that educates around 90% minority students, 90% low-income students. They wanted to expand, and they went to Mayor Barrett and the city of Milwaukee and MPS and said, we'll give you $1 million for a building that's just sitting completely empty. And they said no, and because they wanted to keep it. And they had some dreams of developing it, and ultimately all of those plans fell through. But that's one of the reasons why we did this report was, well, how can we get these high-performing schools easier access to facilities so that they can expand?
But when Wisconsinite covers the state assembly, I often hear the Democrats say, well, but there's this example of a choice school that the owners closed in the middle of the year and left town, went to Florida. Yet you say choice schools work better than most MPS schools generally?
Well, I say on average,
on
right? And for that, I'm making that claim based on a D DPI data from the State Department of Public Instruction, which is, oh, by the way, Tony Evers used to run that, so it's his data. And I'm also saying that based on our data, on average, vouchers and independent charter schools perform better than their traditional Milwaukee public school peers.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, Libby, I'm going to ask you, since you had a great deal to do with this report on Roadmap, about a statement on page 6. There is virtually nothing the state does to help high-performing charter and choice schools expand. Can you elaborate, please?
When we look at what the state does for small businesses around the state of Wisconsin, the state puts policies in place that says, how can we help you be successful? How can we help you expand, hire more people? We think that same idea should be applied to our private and charter schools because they're some of the best in the state. As CJ just said, based on the state report card, on average, they're doing better. They are also serving a lot of children. Our parental choice program serves just under 40,000 kids around the state, and they're doing really well. And so we should be saying to those schools, what barriers are in place for helping you expand, and what can the state do to make it easier?
Okay, perfect segue. What do you think is the biggest barrier that now prevents the expansion of our choice and charter programs, which you guys maintain offer, on balance, a better education?
Well, we talked to a lot of school leaders about this exact question. What are the different ways that the state existing laws are really creating problems? One of the ways that we heard, which we were a little bit surprised because it's a small fix, but one of the ways is saying, how can we make it easier for schools to get payments more regularly? Mm-hmm. Right now, all schools, public schools included, get paid about 4 times a year from the state. But in practice, that means they get their first paycheck at the end of September and they get their last in May. Right. So they're going several months without any income, and right. during that time, they're hiring teachers, they're starting their school year. And so for many school leaders, they said, if you can just give us more regular payments, we'd be able to have a better balancing of our books. We'd qualify for better loans as we want to expand and build more facilities. And we'd also be able to help our families and hopefully serve more children.
So the current payment schedule gives them a cash flow problem?
It does, because it creates this this process where you're only getting paid 4 times a year, yep. yet you're running your school 12 months a year.
Okay. And there's also a recommendation for consistent enrollment periods. What's the issue there?
So around the state, in our three programs, we have the Milwaukee Parental Choice Program, we have Racine, and we have Wisconsin. And all three of those programs actually have a different enrollment windows. There's no standard.
Thank
and so
you.
If you're a family that's moving from Milwaukee to Racine, you may now have to look up a different schedule to figure out if your child can even attend a school that they could have attended in Milwaukee. And we think that those are big barriers for schools because we want to make it as easy for families to access the school of their choice.
And it also deals with the process of improving income verification. Why is that a big deal, CJ?
Well, you look in Milwaukee, right?
Are there different income standards for the Milwaukee Choice Program, Racine, and statewide?
No, we focus for that specifically on Milwaukee, and okay. we look at it in the sense of there's something inherently unfair that in order to get a voucher to go to a private school, parents have to prove that they're poor. You can go to a public charter school, you can go to a traditional MPS school without having to prove your income. And for a lot of families, trying to get your W-2, trying to get your tax forms, trying to get your Social Security card, especially those in low-income areas and those that are low-income, modest means, is very difficult. And we think that streamlining the process to modernize it, looking at other states like Florida, where you can do easier online application into the voucher program because the state has a lot of this data to begin with, really just makes sense. And really, it helps parents just a little bit. And also helps school leaders that want to enroll those students.
Let's move on to another area where you see the potential for change or reforms. Expand access to capital for charter and private schools. You want to summarize that issue, Libby?
Yes. So CJ touched on our vacant schools issue. And
yes.
So part of the challenge is if a school can't buy a vacant school building, they have to raise a significant amount of money to be able to build a new building. And these are millions of dollars. And so Wisconsin should really look at what other states are doing, like Arizona and California, where they're using existing state programs like bonding or state loan programs and saying to schools, you should apply for these so that way you can access them offer facilities. Okay. That will help these schools be able to access more funds, pay them back like everybody else, but be able to expand their seats.
You have a pretty significant change proposed. If a public school district passes a referendum, and we've seen more than $5 billion passed in the last 5 years, including $1.7 billion last year alone, that a charter school should be able to get some of the proceeds from a public school referendum that passes. Pretty big change.
Yeah, you might see less referendums in certain areas. But charter schools are public schools, and we think that the state can easily go in and require that school districts, when they go to referendum, they share the money equally with all the public schools in the area. Ultimately, we think that it's not the money is taxpayer money, and if there's a public charter school that's in a district like Wauwatosa that's doing a really good job, that those referendums, that money should be spread equally to help those schools expand.
Your overall package of reforms would take major changes in state law, right?
Yes,
and that's the reason we're going to begin the state budget debate.
Sure.
Are you confident that your proposed reforms are going to be introduced at some point in the dialogue over the next state budget?
Well, look, I mean, we understand the landscape, which I'm sure we'll get into on who occupies the governor's office.
And we're going to go there.
To our defense, we did start this 2 years ago when it was unsure who was going to be the governor of Wisconsin. But look, ultimately, we think that legislators and the governor should take a hard look at this, because these are policies that will actually improve student outcomes. We think, at the end of the day, though, that education reformers, conservatives, libertarians need to stand for something. And you can't just go around saying Governor Evers is wrong. You actually need to put forth an agenda, and we think that's what we've done.
Let's go back to your agenda, because I just find this very interesting. You're help me understand this. In some school districts participating in choice, you can only enroll in K-4, K-5, first grade, or ninth grade. Now, is that Milwaukee, Racine, or statewide, Libby?
That's just the statewide program.
The statewide program. And by the way, the statewide program has gone up about 50% in the last 2 years. So while you're right, we have 38,187 in all choice programs, 28,000 of those in Milwaukee, 3,200 in Racine. Statewide is now up to 6,878. But if you're a parent and you want your kid to participate statewide, the only windows of getting in are K-4, K-5, 1, and 8?
That's correct. And so it's just a big barrier for allowing both parents to access these schools, mm-hmm. and for other schools to really open up into the program. It's very difficult to start a school, to take a school that's working in Milwaukee like Hope Christian Schools. If they want to go up to Green Bay, it's very hard to open a new school when you can only accept students in kindergarten, first, and ninth grade. And because you're saying to parents, you have to make a decision months in advance, and oh, by the way, there's only 3 of your children if you're lucky enough to have the kids in those grades.
You also make a recommendation. Is there a now cap on the statewide program of 23,000? Although that's going to go up by 1 percentage point.
Right. So we're at 3% right now. It's 3% per district enrollment. So it's going to look different in Green Bay versus Appleton versus Eau Claire. And that's also set to go up by law, 1% every year. We think the state should encourage and just lift that cap, because there's a demand for this program, and we should be helping Wisconsin families access more schools.
Right. Because you say the current cap on the statewide program, 23,000, out of 766 potential students outside Milwaukee and Racine.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Okay, a couple more points I want to get into before we get into the political realities, especially what the governor announced yesterday. Special needs students. You're proposing to allow open enrollment for special needs students. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. So open enrollment is actually a different version of school choice in Wisconsin. It's public school choice. If you live in one public school district, you don't have to move to access another school district. You can participate in open enrollment and apply to send your kid to a different school district. But what we have found, and we actually sued the state over this, mm-hmm. is that this program is discriminatory for children with special needs. The program as it stands right now allows a district to say, we're going to take 10 students in first grade, but we're going to take 0 students with special needs. And what's sort of crazy about that is they're making that decision before the parents are even applying, which means they're making a decision about how many students can access the program before they even know if they can accommodate them. We think that that's discriminatory under federal law towards students with disabilities, because a student could have an eyesight problem and just need to sit a little bit closer up in class, and she could fill a seat very easily, but under the current program, she's not allowed to.
Well, CJ, the governor has said that he's going, that our state aid for special ed, frozen for 10 years, I think $338 million. He wants to increase that by $600 million. When the Wisconsin Policy Forum just comes out with a report saying about 1 in 7 of our all K-12 students have special needs, isn't that additional $600 million that the Governor Evers is going to recommend needed and justified because it's been frozen for 10 years?
Mm-hmm. There could be value there. Look, we are not against spending on schools. Let's just be clear. What we're in favor of is smarter spending on schools. And if you're telling me that we underfund our special education, I have not read the Wisconsin Policy Forum report yet.
No, it's just pointing out the numbers.
Right. And look, I mean, then there could very well be reasons to spend more on special education. We also think, though, that special education, we can improve special education by opening up the open enrollment program, by expanding the special needs voucher program, which Governor Evers wants to actually roll back, because we think that special needs children deserve equal opportunity for school choice.
I want to ask you about another statement that I find very interesting. Education savings accounts, quote, on page 23 of the report, are superior to state vouchers. So would you like to scrap the voucher program entirely and go to ESAs, education savings accounts?
I think it should be discussed. I think education savings accounts, it's essentially school choice 2.0.
How does that work?
2.0. So how it works is, think about everyone gets a voucher. And everyone gets the same amount of money.
$1,500, $2,000.
Let's call it $10,000. Let's call it the cost to educating a student. Instead of the schools getting it, it goes right to the parent. The parent essentially gets a savings account from the state, and they can spend that money however they see fit.
What are the tax ramifications of that?
Well, you know, we haven't looked into the tax ramifications yet, because it's essentially public money. It's money from the state. Mm-hmm. And the state would give it to the parents, and the parents can spend it. They can take some courses at private schools, some courses at charter schools, some courses at public schools. It's happening in Arizona. It's happening in Florida. They passed a really robust program in Nevada, but then they're having problems funding it. But we think that that's kind of where it is, because it gives parents more freedom, more opportunity, because at the end of the day, we shouldn't be funding brick-and-mortar buildings. We should be giving parents the money, and parents make those decisions.
I want to ask you about another pretty interesting statement in the report. It's on page 23. Students in private and charter schools are, quote, the report's term, worth less than those in public schools. And the example here, Libby, is MPS student spending in 2017-18, $10,555. On a choice program in Milwaukee, K through 8, $7,530. Grades 9 through 12, $8,176. Is that what you use to justify the report's term, worth less?
Yes, we think that no matter where a student goes, she should be treated equally. Whether you're going to the traditional public school down the street, to you're using a voucher, or you're attending a public charter school, the state should be funding you at the same amount of money. And in Wisconsin, that's just not the case. We see a gap, a huge gap between traditional public and our voucher, but we also see that gap existing for our public charter schools. Public charter schools are only getting just over $8,000 per student. So like the gap between vouchers and traditional public, you're seeing students receive less money despite, on average, these schools doing much better than the traditional public schools.
Another debatable term in the report, public schools skim funds from charter schools. I didn't know that. Talk about that.
And the Wisconsin Policy Forum did research on that, too. And look, so when you follow the money, when you look at these charter schools, the ones that are authorized by Milwaukee Public Schools, some of them are incredibly high performing, like Carmen. MPS gets to count those students for full revenue from the state and local property taxpayers. So they're getting about, as Libby said, about $10,000 on average per student, those that attend charters. But then they go around and give the charters about $7,500. So they're keeping the difference between that. And when you average that out for the number of kids in charters, MPS is keeping millions of dollars that we think belong to those charter schools. Other states like Illinois have actually capped the ability of school districts to skim money that's rightfully belonging to the charter schools, and we would encourage the state to look at that.
Okay. Now, we only have three or four minutes left, so let's go to what recently happened. So let's go to this chart that talks about the overview that I alluded to earlier. State aid for K-12 public schools in the current fiscal year ending June 30 is $7 billion. The governor would take that to $8.06 billion 2 years from now, a 15.2% change. The DPI budget submitted when Mr. Evers was running that agency before he was governor said the spending on choice program right now, its baseline is $191.1 million. And the DPI budget says with the assumption that choice is going to grow, it would grow to $238.1 million, a two-year increase of 24.5%. So my question is, Mr. Evers' statement yesterday that he wants to freeze choice. Now, we don't know the details. We won't know that until the budget is actually released on Thursday. But I'm taking freeze as meaning that he would keep it choice spending at the $191.1 million. What would that do to charter and private schools, CJ?
Well, it would end those schools as we know it, right? Because
why,
you're freezing.
You're continuing their baseline funding. End is a...
Well,
overstatement?
The way I understand it, and that they will prohibit those schools from taking new students unless if those schools graduate students or something, because it had the budget that I read yesterday that I think you're referring to says we're going to cap the voucher program until someone graduates and then there's another new one. But that just isn't understanding how the program works. I mean, that would say that you can't open up a new school because then where would you get those under the cap? You couldn't take on new students in the voucher program. So you're telling a school like Hope Christian Schools that for seven straight years has had a graduation rate of 100% compared to MPS's, which is 60%, you can't expand. I mean, so you're basically freezing the program, whereas, you know, we spent the last 20 minutes talking about how do we get these high-performing schools to grow. Mm-hmm. Governor Evers' budget does the exact opposite. It says we're not going to allow these high-performing schools to grow anymore. Then when you look at the statewide, it would be a huge deterrent for schools to enter the program. And then we haven't even talked about the public charter schools, the similar freeze.
Yeah, he wants to put a freeze on new charter schools approved by local school districts, a freeze right. That would continue through 2023. Excuse me, go ahead.
And we think it would have an equally disastrous effect because when you look at, let's take Madison for example, one of the highest racial achievement gaps in the country. And in Madison, 92% of the schools are traditional public schools. So we say we need more independent charter schools, and that's what the University of Wisconsin has been authorizing when you look at One City, which recently expanded. Under Governor Evers' budget, it prohibits the expansion of those types of independent charters, which in Milwaukee and urban areas all over the country are some of the highest performing and educate some of the most neediest students.
I have this question. When you look at a map of where charter and choice schools are, it's favored from Green Bay down to La Crosse, and not too many choice schools are in the northern one-third of Wisconsin. So do we have a regional disparity in terms of this program?
Well, I think it's due to a lot of the barriers we've been talking about this morning. It's difficult for new schools to open up in those areas because if you're want to join the voucher program, you can only take kids in kindergarten, first, and ninth grade. Okay. You have less funding. And so I don't think it's an indication that there isn't an interest from those families. Unfortunately, there are just barriers for allowing schools to really open and serve those students.
CJ, we're almost out of time. Do you have a ballpark estimate of what your reforms would cost? Is that available?
No, we don't. That's something that we'll certainly look into. I think when you take a step back, and I think you kind of alluded to Governor Evers' budget, and you've alluded to the 15% increase, I think the $1.4 billion in spending.
Yes.
And again, we're in favor of smarter spending. And we actually put forth some policy proposals to help us understand how you make smarter spending. And I think we need more transparency so taxpayers journalists and think tankers can look at exactly where these dollars are going to educate kids in the classroom. So we do think there is a bipartisan conversation that can be had about where dollars are going and how we can replicate what's working. But right now it's so hard to tell that. And when we look at across-the-board spending increases, we think that studies have shown, and we have a study coming out tomorrow that will show just this, that there's not a very strong relationship between higher spending and better student outcomes. So when we look at what Governor Evers is proposing, we say, well, again, to bring it full circle, what's the goal of it? Is the goal to improve student outcomes and improve student achievement? We think the answer is no.
Okay, final question to end the show this way. If your report recommends a number of reforms, if one of them and only one of them passes, which would be the most needed one, Libby?
I think the most needed one is to make our voucher programs equal. So have, you know, lift the enrollment cap, make grade point entry levels, those kindergarten, first and ninth grades go away. Let's encourage private schools to serve more students because they're really doing it well. We should give more families educational opportunities.
CJ, number one recommendation, if it became law?
Expanding course choice. So Governor Walker put forth something called the part-time open enrollment program, which enables students in schools to take courses at different public and private schools. Everyone likes it. It's got approval across sector, but there's restrictions on it that prevent actual students from really taking advantage of it. Because I think at the end of the day, we should encourage students to take courses at any school.
And that's the course choice issue.
Yes.
And that is on page 19 of this report. I'll turn it around. Roadmap to Student Achievement is a valuable document as legislators and governors and policymakers and think tanks debate funding for our K-12 schools, private choice and public over the next biennium. I want to thank CJ Safer and Libby Sobek for coming in to talk about your report. I found it fascinating. Thank you so much.
Thank you.